Succession number 27460, Reel 4.
Mr. Wilkes, Reel 4. We're at camp and have just completed breakfast. What would be the routine after breakfast?
After that first breakfast, it was allocation of tents and accommodation, drawing blankets, palliasses and everything like that, and stuffing the palliasses with straw.
Were they comfortable, the palliasses?
I suppose for what you had, yes, it was acceptable. It wasn't 5-star.
When you'd done that on the first day, what was the routine after breakfast thereafter?
Every day was go back in, make sure the tent was spick and span, and then whatever was on orders, what was to be done that day. It might be gun drill, it might be going out with the guns, it might be the wireless operators working, putting them through their paces, whatever. There'd be a whole host of orders on the orders of the day, and you just followed those.
And what might you personally be doing?
I got one or two motorcycle riding jobs. It was in the second week when I took my driving test, which was on an afternoon. And the vehicles that were there to be used for the driving tests, two were very old. I think they were immediate post-World War I. And one was the Guy Ant that we'd taken up. And that was the one I took my test in.
What did it entail, the driving test?
You had to be able to go up and down the gearbox, keep the vehicle on the road. And the hill start, that was very important. Now, the sergeant came to me and he first of all told me, he said, you'll be taking your test in the Thornycroft. That was while I was at lunch. When I'd finished lunch, he said, you'll be taking your test in the Morris Commercial. That was the two old vehicles. Then he came to me, and because I was sitting in the Morris at the time, he said, no, he said, you're not taking a test in this. He says, you're going to take it in the Guy. Right? So he says, now then, he said, when you do your hill start, he says, don't try and start in first gear. He says, it'll take it in second, and you'll be all right. Well, I was a bit like that. Now, the clutch on this Guy was very savage. It used to worry everybody, me included. And so the officer took me out for my test. And coming back up into the camp, it's a very steep hill, and it wasn't a made-up road in those days. It's tarmac now. But it's all loose stones, great big boulder-type stones, about 3 and 4 inches diameter. We stopped on this slope. And he said, I'm going to give you a hill start test now. And he took a punch matchbox out of his pocket. If you can remember what a punch matchbox is, it's made of very fine wood. And he chucked that behind the wheel. And then I was told to drive away. If that box had crushed in any way, I would have failed my test. But it didn't, and I passed. And about half an hour later, I was told to take a Morris 500 weight pickup truck down to the local shop to collect some stuff for the officer's mess.
When you finished that, and you of course passed your test, lunchtime, what would you get? That would be main meal of the day, was it?
Lunch,
dinner
yes,
time, was
yes,
called
mm,
it.
That's right.
What would that comprise?
Well, it varied. It was usually stew. It could be corned beef stew, it could be beef or anything, you know, the stew. And then it could be followed by maybe prunes and custard, or rice pudding, or spotted dick, something like that, depending on the frame of mind of the cooks.
I was going to ask you about the cooks. Were they trained or just picked it up as they were given the job to do?
I think that was more like it. I know one was a coal man. he was usually as black as the ace of spades. But he never remained with the regiment because he deserted a couple of times, and it was
Did you have to line up cafeteria-wise for your food? Or for dinner?
Just in a queue, yes.
And was it in a large marquee or
no? We had wooden huts up there. It was apart from the tents for sleeping in, the huts were permanent structures, and the naffy was a permanent structure.
Oh, you had a naffy?
Yes, we had a naffy up there.
Outside of taking your test in the afternoon, that particular afternoon, what duties might you have on the other afternoons of the camp?
Just general duties. If they couldn't find you anything to do, they'd have you walking in lines looking for cigarette ends or matchstocks. Otherwise, you were out on the range. If the guns were out and firing, we used to go out with them, even if we weren't doing anything. Used to watch a bit and see.
Was there any sport into the routine?
Any
sport?
No.
So what time would tea time be?
5 o'clock.
And that was the end of your working day, was it?
Yes.
What did they give you for tea?
Bread, butter or marge, and jam or cheese. And tea, of course. And that was it.
And presumably you could go to the
naffy after that, yes. Then you could
How did you fill your evenings in?
Well, I think we used to... one of the main things, the band used to play for the officers' mess. So my brother and I, we were keen on music and we used to love to go and listen to the band.
Did you go into the local village or towns?
No.
Or town,
You weren't allowed. You weren't allowed off the camp.
So you never got in to see what the local population is?
No,
anyway.
No.
And the following day you had the same routine as well?
Yes.
How long was the camp?
Fortnight. And that was where things went slightly wrong. Because we were due to come back home on the Saturday. And orders went up to say we were going home on Saturday, but at lunchtime those orders were cancelled and we were told that we would be remaining there overnight. No communication with the outside world or anything. And so there we remained. And there was talk that we would never be going home, we'd be just mobilised, but we did actually go home on the Sunday.
But you're getting close to the end of the month when the war...
That's right, yes. Mm.
So they were aware that
yes.
things were really creating
crisis
right.
stage. Things were hotting up.
So you went home on the Saturday...
On the Sunday.
Sunday, sorry. When the mobilisation came, within days?
Yes. If I'm right, we went home on the Sunday, mobilisation was Friday, and war was declared on Sunday.
Did you get back to work for a short time?
Oh, yes. Yes. We got back to work from Monday to Friday. And then word came down to the office that all members of auxiliary forces had to report immediately to their units.
Must have been a bit of a crisis for the firm, because a lot of people would just move out like that.
That's right. It would be.
So they'd have a major recruiting job on their hands.
More than likely.
What did your mother feel like? Her two sons were now regular soldiers, in effect, in
yes.
wartime.
Well, I think she just felt, they're soldiers, they've got to go. Because the talk before all this was, when conscription was first mooted, we discussed things, and I had fancied going into the Air Force, A, or B, the Navy. But she didn't want me to go into either. She felt that the risk would be less in the Army. So, of course, as conscription raised its ugly head, I went, with my brother, we both decided go where we can choose rather than be put.
And hence you joined the unit in
yes,
March.
Yes, that's right.
Did the outbreak of war cause any great change in the routine of the unit? Well, obviously full-time, I know that, but...
Well, Not really. We were based in Bradford in the drill hall, which was rather inadequate for the first 5 or 6 weeks. The first Sunday after the war, we had a church parade, and that was held in the grounds where the new Bradford Grammar School is now. Now, our band led us in full, beautiful military colours, you know, and our quartermaster sergeant, he was a wizard with the mace there, he could spin that up. What an attraction! We marched to the parade, to the church parade, and marched back. Now, our second line regiment followed us, and then the following week, the band marched between the 70th and the 121. So there was a bit of band for both lots, and by then we'd got battle dress. We got battle dress on the 2nd of September.
What did they issue you with?
Just a battle dress blouse and trousers, and a pair of boots.
They didn't duplicate. You didn't have a good pair.
Oh no, not at that stage, no.
And how was it issued? What was the process of giving you the handing the uniform to you?
If it fitted, it you know, they would see if it was anything like. If it was too small, well, they'd give you a bigger one. If it was too big, well, see if you can find someone that fits. It was chaos.
There was no sides or anything like that. Just looked at you and handed it.
That's right. Yes, I think there were three sizes, large, small, and in between.
But it must have been quite something to get the uniform after you.
Yes, because it made you feel that you were now part of an army, whereas you just felt as an also-ran. You see, on the Saturday before war was declared, we'd spent the day on route marches in our boiler suits, and we felt bloomin' awful. On the Friday night, when we'd been mobilised, most of us, me included, were issued with a gas mask, a steel helmet, enamel mug, and a water bottle. And you carried that wherever you went in case someone pinched them. There was a good bit of that because there weren't enough to go around, and you could not go out unless you had a gas mask. So everyone was looking for, and a steel helmet. Everyone was looking for those.
So you had just, you had any gas training?
No, none at all.
So you had this equipment, as you say, and you had to carry it wherever you went?
Yes. We'd had no gas training. I don't think that came till about November.
Well, you did mention the fact that you were getting newer vehicles, and how were they arriving?
Well, the first new vehicles, things that to arrive, was some new BSA motorcycles. Now, up till then, we just had one motorcycle, which had to serve battery headquarters, regimental headquarters, etc. Well, on the outbreak of war, we'd got a lot of these impressed vehicles, so we had a lot of motorcycles. We had enough, but there they were. But we got these brand new BSA motorcycles, and it didn't suit the Sergeant Major, so he hung out, he hid the Norton because he liked it better. And that's, I'll come to that story later on. But yes, we got those BSAs first of all, and then the next to arrive was some Bedford 1500 weight trucks. They didn't have windscreens as such. They just had a small glass square that's one in front of the driver, one in front of the passenger, and those folded down flat. And those were brought up by ATS girls, and I remember them all having to come in and be fed. I think there was about 9 or 10 of these vehicles came to Battery HQ, and these drivers had to be fed with the men.
And how many dispatch riders were there? I didn't ask you that in your unit.
I think there I can't be sure, but I think there were about three official dispatch riders.
Did you like the BSA?
No. It was, but performance-wise, it was a good machine, but it just didn't have the zip that the Norton had. The Norton really moved. And that was why the Sergeant Major hung on to it.
Had you been issued with any weapons? Personal weapons?
No. No, at that time, if my memory serves me correctly, the complement of vehicles for the battery was 18 Longley Enfield rifles. That was enough to give two changes of the guard. And that was all they ever did have. They didn't have any more weapons in World War I because artillery was supposed to be out of range of rifle fire. But, of course, that all changed with the way the Second World War went.
But you could be subject to air attack, couldn't you? So you'd have to have, did you have some any form? Did they give you any form of anti-aircraft fire?
We did get some Bren guns, and we did get some anti-tank rifles through time, but not immediately. We got those. The Brens we mounted on a 1,500 weight Bedford truck when we went to France.
So the war's declared. You're getting new vehicles. Those, I think you said you were in the drill war for about 5 or 6 weeks before you did any move.
Yes.
What were you doing in those 5 or 6 weeks?
Well, it's hard to imagine, really. I think a lot of people were just keeping out of sight. I think they were just trying to find people jobs to do. Now, I had a regular job as a dispatch rider because I had to do what they called a DRLS. There were 5 runs a day and it was a 3 and a 2. So, some days I did the 3. That would be the morning, noon and afternoon. And then there was the 2 evening runs that was to do. So different riders did them.
And where were you going on those runs?
Out to Otley and Ilkley.
Were you sleeping at home or sleeping in the drill hall?
Sleeping in the drill hall.
You weren't allowed to go home?
Only the very first night that we were mobilised, they hadn't blankets or accommodation. And those of us that lived within a certain range of the drill hall, we were sent home for the night. Report back at 7 a.m, which we did.
And your mother now is on her own.
Absolutely.
Did it concern you?
Yes. It was a worry. Always was.
So after 5 weeks, 6 weeks, you had your first move. Where did you go?
We moved to Pateley Bridge. And that was a nice move. And we weren't there very long. And then we went on an exercise. I don't know why. It proved that some of the vehicles weren't up to it. That's the old lorries. They couldn't even pull the ammunition trailers empty. We had to go out onto the Yorkshire Moors somewhere. It was a horrendous journey, torrential rain. And it was after we'd sat in our open trucks all night, waiting for an order to move. And as I say, we went up... if I looked at the map, I could tell you where. I can't just think of it. Out Leyburn Way, though. And then we went into a proper camp there, wooden huts, and we got thawed out. And next day we came back to Pateley Bridge. And then, after a few days, we moved to Pickering. Or the battery moved to Pickering. Regimental headquarters went to Thornton Lindale, and the other battery went to Brompton, near Scarborough.
Now, dispatch riders, you're open to the climate, aren't you? Did they give you any form of protective clothing?
No. I was lucky. I'd swapped the infantry coat that I'd been issued with for a short mounted coat, which was very warm. It was a good coat. And I was issued with riding breeches, because I was riding the motorcycle, but I had to wear puttees with them. I was even issued with spurs as well. I've got them, so I don't know whether to spur the blooming bike on or not. Yes, I was issued with spurs. It was a long time. It was while I was stationed at Pickering, they even put a speed limit on motorcycles. They put it down to 55 miles an hour. And, of course, we had some severe winters.
The first winter was particularly severe, wasn't it?
Yes. And I understand there was a sentry frozen to death at Malton whilst on his two-hour duty. We were ordered that we were not to stand still while we're on duty. You could stand for a few minutes, but pace your patch regularly, and the sergeant or NCO of the guard would come out and inspect to see that you were doing it.
So you do guard duty?
I've done guard duty, yes.
What was the process of putting you onto guard duty? You'd obviously be selected, obviously, as a group.
No, your name was just... So many names are put down. You're for guard, you're for fire picket, and eventually parachute duty and all the other duties that you got.
Was there a high degree of turnout expected for guard duty? Was there been a polishing exercise?
Yes, you had to be immaculate. Your brasses had to be shining, everything. And when you were inspected, we had little short putties that used to go around the bottom of our trousers down here. And you had to have those equally rolled so that everything was spot on.
They're just like a bandage, aren't they?
Yes, and tucked in.
And you, as you said, you were inspected. Did you have something like they had an infantry regiment, a stick man as the smartest man on?
That's right, yes.
And he would become the messenger. In effect.
That's right. Yes, I was never stick man.
What were you guarding exactly? You know, what might you be guarding?
Well, in Bradford, outside the drill hall, we had the guns in a fenced off a bit that we fenced off. And we had to guard those. At Pateley Bridge, we had the guns down at in the park, and we had to guard those. I think by then we'd got eight or at least eight guns then. And then it was after, yes.
Had the guns changed? I mean, you had 18-pounders.
No, we were still on 18-pounders at Pateley Bridge. We were still on 18-pounders at Pickering. And then whilst we were at Pickering, I was sent on a course along with a few others. And have you time to listen to this? Right. I was on dispatch riders' duties, which was a 24-hour duty that commenced at 2 o'clock each day. And I was sitting in the battery office round about midday when the PSI, the permanent staff instructor, came in. We had two in battery headquarters. And he came in complaining about the inefficiency of our mechanics. There was something wrong with his Norton motorbike, and he was going to have to go back to second-line workshops, and he'd never see it again. And I listened to all his complaints, or some of them, and then I ventured to, because you hardly dare speak, you know. Excuse me, sir. I said, what is wrong with your motorcycle? He said, what would you know about the... I said, well, possibly enough to put it right. So he then told me what the problem was. I said, well, I think if it's not too bad, I can put it right. When you come off duty, you go and put it right and then report to me. So I did. And I reported to him. And he said, have you road tested? I said, no, I've tested it on the stand. I know it's right. He said, go out and do 20 miles on it and then come and tell me. I said, well, I'll need a work ticket. So I had a work ticket and I went and did 20 miles and came back. And he said, right. He jumped on the bike, rode up the town and straight back. He said, leave it there. He never said thanks or anything. But the next I knew was Christmas Eve, when once again I was on duty. It was the evening and he was going through some papers and he suddenly just looked up. He said, Wilkes, he said, on the 10th of February, you're going on a motor vehicle mechanics course. And I think that was the door that opened that set me on the route that I'm on today. Because I was sent, along with some others, to a firm called Man Egerton's. They were the Rolls-Royce and Bentley people in Norwich. And whilst there, I learnt such a lot. I got on well with the instructors. Being a theory man, I could talk to them and they could talk to me. And most of the other people could not talk. And that was it. And Though I didn't take the final exam, we were recalled before then. I learned later, after I joined the regular regiment, that I'd been the top pupil. So that was that.
Did you have any visits from high-ranking officers in these early weeks of the war?
Not that I'm aware of. We probably did, but we didn't have to prepare for it. Not like we had to once we got into the regulars.
You moved up to Pateley Bridge.
I yes.
Said, how long were you there?
It wasn't long. I can remember we moved out of Pateley Bridge on the 8th of November, 1939.
And you went to Pickering, wasn't it?
Yes.
Was that a tented camp?
Oh, no, we were in billets there. So was Pateley Bridge.
And the onset of winter was... winter was coming in, yes. And it was a particularly severe one, as you say.
That's right.
What difficulties did that bring to you?
Lots.
In the camps you were in?
First of all, it meant draining... antifreeze hadn't been brought in by that stage, so it meant draining all the vehicles every night and making sure they didn't freeze up. Now, this was a problem because getting water for them the next morning was another thing. And once you'd put water in, you had to make sure the vehicle was running, and sometimes they didn't, and you had to get them going. This was quite an onerous job. Whilst in Pickering, most of my day was spent teaching a lot of these people that had private cars how to drive with crash gearboxes. And I spent quite a lot of time on that. And so you could virtually say I was a driving instructor.
Did you get to a condition where you just couldn't move because of the weather?
Pretty well, yes. The roads are blocked and everything, but somehow, I know I had to get a message through to Grassington one day. The snow was very deep, it was very hard going, and the chap that had gone in the morning hadn't arrived back when I set off back. I never met him, I probably did, but didn't see him. He was bringing the message back that motorcycles were barred off the road because of the conditions.
Well, what about things like water, the normal water supply in the camp? Did that freeze up? Or did you have any problems there?
No. Being in billets, we managed all right for that. There was another thing. Pickering used to have a lot of stables down there. Actually, we took over from the Northumberland Hussars. We saw quite a number of them walking about with their arms in slings and things like that. They'd had these unbroken horses, and I think the only breaks were their own bones.